The 7th of October 2025 will mark the 2-year anniversary since armed groups from the Gaza Strip carried out their assault on Israel. It seems such a long time ago, and since then so much has happened, from displacement, destruction, slaughter and genocide. Where do things stand currently, and what do we know that we didn't know a year ago or even 2 years ago? Here to help us navigate all this is Geopolicy founder Adnan Khan. How are you keeping, Adnan? I feel like it's been a long time since we've actually had a catch-up.
I'm good, Yusuf. It absolutely does. I think it has been a couple of weeks, actually, since we last sat down to do a podcast. So, yeah, it's good to be back again, and really we can get our teeth into this pertinent topic.
Yeah, definitely good to have you back. Before we begin, I want to remind everyone that you can find us on all major social media platforms where you can subscribe and you'll never miss a thing. So, Adnan, as we approach the 2-year anniversary of October 7th, what do we know about Israeli strategy and its long-term goals? Are they anywhere near their goals? What's happening here?
So what's really becoming much clearer now as we approach the 2-year anniversary is, for Israel, they view this as a unique opportunity. Despite everything they've said about the events of 7th of October, for them, this is a unique opportunity to really pursue, with every cover they need, their original ambitions from 1948 and the long-term goals they have. Their strategy has become clear. They want to make Gaza unlivable. They want to expand under the guise of security. And this is something they're not even really hiding. And that's why the way they're going to achieve this, we've seen now. It's famine, it's genocide, it's destroying embryo clinics, it's destroying places of worship, schools, tents. It's killing men, women, elderly children. It's rolling tanks over people. It's burning people. It's raping people and using Palestinians as human shields as well. The Israelis are so confident or so arrogant, depending on how you want to look at it, they're even talking about how they want to expand into Egypt and Jordan. That's the level they're actually going to, because for them, this is a unique opportunity. They've got the cover of 7th of October. And that's why, on one hand, they openly state what they want to do. And then they criticize people when they are criticized for trying to gain security. So what Israel's doing, and what's become clear now, is they want to completely change the regional order. And the way they want to do that is they want to expand under the guise of security. And it seems, as we approach the 2-year anniversary, that they've even convinced America of this, and America's really by their side for them to pursue this.
So at the UN summit, there was a big push for recognition of Palestinian state. Was there a move towards Palestinian state in order to somehow stop Israeli progression? Does it mean that we're turning a corner now? What's the meaning of this? Why is there a big push by other nations, for example, Britain and France?
So you're absolutely right. This has been getting a lot of attention for the past few weeks. We are just coming now on the back of the UN annual assembly meeting. I think we're going to look at this. Look, what does it practically mean? In the current context, with all these European countries and other countries saying we want to recognize a Palestinian state, what does that actually mean? There's no definition of where the state will be, where will the borders be, how will it be able to run? What is relationship with Israel? And these are very, very critical questions. So the fact that everyone's calling for the recognition of a Palestinian state, and the fact that they haven't defined what that is and what shape it will take, I think that's actually really, really telling. And what it really tells me is, who's the audience for this? If you look at Macron, if you look at Keir Starmer, if you look at across the world, especially Europe, the European leaders, in Europe, you have a massive left movement. You have a lot of people who are on the left. And a lot of the mainstream parties, the lefty parties, have lost a lot of support for their open embrace and support of Israel for 2 years. So I actually feel this is really for them. What they're trying to do is really show their own audience that, look, we may have supported Israel, but we do support a Palestinian state as well. However, they don't plan to deliver on it. I mean, on one hand, they say we support Palestine, a Palestinian state. On the other hand, they continue to arm Israel, who's carrying out a genocide and slaughtering the people. So for all practical purposes, you know, I don't want to put a negative spin on this, but what does it all practically mean?
So you say they've not defined it. David Lammy, he was recently interviewed regarding this, and he actually said that, fine, it's not a state as of yet, but it's their commitment to the process of making the Palestinian state. And he actually said on the 1967 borders. So it seems like they have an idea in mind, or would you say that was just kind of slip of the tongue under pressure? He just mentioned that.
Mm. No, so this talk of a two-state solution, it's always been based on the 1967 borders. You know, we've had the Oslo Accords, you had the Madrid conferences, you've had various other agreements. But what you find is it's never really gone into the final straight. So, you know, this on the 1967 borders, we need to have a Palestinian state. Well, that's even a debate in itself because Israel's been expanding since 1967.
Israel, you think the two-state solution is dead now?
So, look, the two-state solution in origin was the US plan. And this goes back to just before 1967, and they managed to impose it upon Israel. But Israel has always been dead against this idea because Israel wants the whole of Palestine and more. Israel wants the whole of historic Palestine. As far as Israel's concerned, they will never have full security if there is a Palestinian state. And the surrounding regional leaders, they accepted two states a long time ago, even though their people never really accepted it. So if the two-state solution is dead, it's dead because of Israel. It's not dead because of the Palestinians. It's the Israelis have never actually wanted it. So the only way we will get a Palestinian state of whatever shape is if and when the US imposes it upon Israel. But Israel doesn't want it. And in fact, Netanyahu has been very open. There's no place for a Palestinian state. In fact, his narrative is talking about a Palestinian state now is supporting terror. But that's the same argument they've been using since 1967, that Israeli security comes first, Palestinian state, yeah, we'll just push it to the peripheral, we'll come around to it. So I don't think the two-state solution is dead. However, Israel is killing it. It's in the process and it's always been, and Israel never wants a separate state. But you've got to keep in mind, wherever a Palestinian state is, technically it's a sovereign state, it's independent. So as a result, that can be a threat to Israeli security. And because the Palestinians in many ways outnumber the Israelis, this creates all sorts of strategic problems for Israel. So yes, Israel's trying to kill the two-state solution, but a Palestinian state can only come about if it's imposed by the West. It's not going to come about through negotiations and things like that, because Israel has shown they're able to kill it off.
Just off the back of that, with France and Keir Starmer, was it a few days ago, he basically announced that Britain recognises a Palestinian state. And I know it's early days. I know that they've not got it fully defined. But doesn't that show that actually the West might, some of the countries at the very least, might be on a trajectory to impose it upon Israel? Or is it that they can't really get in edgeways with the US really being the main power?
So interestingly, the two-state solution, a Palestinian state next to a Zionist state, this has always been the American agenda. This is what they've worked towards. And this is what every other power in the world has accepted, that the solution to this problem is two states side by side. So what's going on now isn't some diversion from history. Historically, since 67, the solution to this problem has always been two states. It was now just a matter of, okay, the details need to be sorted out. So what Keir Starmer and Macron and everyone's doing, they're just reiterating what has been the long-standing position. And what Israel is saying is, how dare you even discuss this in the current climate? Which is funny, because when it is discussed in a normal climate, Israel still doesn't want to discuss it. It wants to talk about its actual security. So, look, we'll have to see where this goes. But, you know, we've been there before. Well, we've been there since 1967, really, and no progress has been made. And, you know, I reiterate again, how can these countries support a Palestinian state when they're still arming Israel? If they were to stop the arms, stop the finances, then they're serious. So I think even from Netanyahu's perspective, until they don't put sanctions or stop the arms transfers, even he knows this is just talk.
So off the back of that, yeah, they're continuing to arm Israel. When it came to other countries such as Iraq, Kosovo, Rwanda, there was always, always, always a global response. But in this case, Israel hasn't not only been able to get away with murder, genocide, but yeah, it's been is continuing to receive arms from these countries. How does that happen?
So quite simply, the West deal with Israel like a parent deals with a spoiled child. It's their child. he gets on your nerves, but it's your child at the end of the day. So, you know, you've got to bring him home, you've got to discipline him, but you love him, he's still your child. Israel was the West outpost. They created it for strategic reasons. They created it as a forward base in the region, like the Crusaders created a Crusader state in the 11th century. So the West, what you find is, you know, you mentioned Iraq or Rwanda, you know, this, there's a genocide going on, but they're struggling to intervene. And in fact, what you're finding is they are literally slaughtering all of their sacred cows in order to defend it. And that's quite unique. You know, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, censorship, pressure on people who don't agree with them. What you're finding is the West is having to do everything in order to protect their child. And this is probably the unique thing with this. I mean, the West have no relationship with any other country like this. This is their creation. It's their spoiled child. As much as this country gets on their nerves, she continues to suck more and more finance out of these countries. But as far as they're concerned, it's our child. It's our outpost and we have to defend it at all costs.
So I guess the question is, why isn't the US reining Israel in? It's been 2 years. There's been back and forth, but ultimately it's not, the US isn't actually getting involved and isn't actually preventing Israel from doing these atrocities.
So there's a few reasons for this. First, you know, as far as America's concerned, you know, she's a global power. She's got global issues to deal with. Gaza just doesn't fit into that picture. This small territory in the middle of the Middle East, it's not really strategic for America. So that's why Trump, to be honest, he's not really interested. But the only thing you hear from Trump is this should have been over. Why is this still going on? Why is this still on my desk? He's not really interested. And to show you how the lack of interest from Trump, when he was inaugurated in January, he imposed a ceasefire deal on Israel after Netanyahu dragged his feet for over a year. So everybody thought, okay, we're turning a corner now. America's now imposing upon Israel. Israel didn't see through the peace deal. And when the peace deal concluded, it continued with its genocide. And Trump didn't do anything. What that means is Trump only did this in order for there to be nothing going on in Palestine on his inauguration. He wanted himself to be the center of attention. And in the end, look, the arms are still flowing to Israel from America. So that shows you, you know, America's, you know, Gaza just isn't that important for them in the strategic landscape.
It does seem, Adnan, that Israel has lost a lot of global support. The public opinion doesn't seem to be in favour of Israel. Is that how you're reading this as well?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is, it's actually quite unprecedented. What's going on is everyone can see on social media what Israel is doing. I mean, to some degree, Israel's not even hiding it. Israeli troops are posting regularly on social media. People are seeing what's going on. Former supporters of Israel, Piers Morgan, Candace Owens, even Charlie Clerk at the end, all of them are questioning Israel because they can see what they're seeing is the complete opposite to what they're hearing from Israel. So we're in a position now where Israel's actually being exposed. Israel's seen as the aggressor. Israel's seen as imposing upon the people. The Palestinians are the victims. And many people in the world have just come to the conclusion now that what they're seeing is the complete opposite to what they're being told.
So the way I see this is that, public opinion might have changed, but obviously this is ultimately going to come to an end someday. And I feel that when that end comes, the public opinion will slowly shift back because people will forget. Or do you think this would actually have more ramifications going forward, i.e., the people won't forget what Israel's been doing?
So I think we'll have to wait and see, but I think this is quite unprecedented because what you're finding is neutral people who were supporters of Israel, they've done a complete U-turn. You know, Piers Morgan, who said Israel has the right to defend itself, now saying they're going too far, that's quite unprecedented. So I think this will have long-term implications. We're seeing in America, the youth are turning against Israel. We're seeing in Europe, the elites, the governments are struggling to maintain their positions when it comes to Israel. You mentioned David Lammy and Keir Starmer. These were the loudest supporters of Israel when October 7th happened. Even they've had to do a U-turn on it because they can see where public opinion is going. So I think, this is going to have long-term implications. I mean, literally 72 years worth of work Israel did to build favorable public opinion in 2 years has gone down the drain.
Near the end of September, the UN Commission concluded After 2 years of investigation, many already figured this out, that Israel is committing a genocide. This comes after a long list of institutions have come to similar conclusions. This is unprecedented, is it not?
Absolutely. It's unprecedented because those people who were victims of a genocide, the Holocaust, now they're being accused and effectively, I mean, they've basically been charged with committing a genocide. If you look at the ICJ, they have charged them with committing genocide. Now you need to have the court case where they've got to defend themselves. And if you look at the Israeli arguments, they're not defending themselves. They say anyone who calls accused of a genocide is anti-Semitic. Anyone who accuses us of a genocide is a Hamas supporter. They're not actually refuting the arguments being put forward. So the UN commission that you mentioned, that was a 2-year investigation. The same commission that 2 years ago said that Hamas committed war crimes. You can't accuse it of being pro-Hamas when they've actually concluded Hamas committed war crimes. And this is not one of every organization and institute set up to monitor genocide has said a genocide has taken place. Every organization set up to monitor human rights abuses are saying the same thing as well. The only people who are saying it's not a genocide are the ones carrying it out.
So as we approach 2 years, what has been the impact on the region, the wider region?
So I think Qatar has shown what happened in Qatar, the attack by Israel on a Hamas meeting, that, look, Israel doesn't care about the Sykes-Picot borders. They don't care about sovereignty. They're going to do what they want to do. And if the leaders fall, this would end and they'd be able to placate their populations. What the attack on Qatar has shown is even if you have America's largest base in your territory, you are not safe. We're going to come after you. You look at Syria, effectively, Israel's taken over the Golan Heights, it's annexed it, and it's taking over the south of Syria. It's actually carried out attacks in greater Damascus area. Now Israel's saying that they want the whole south of Damascus down to the border of Israel to be demilitarized. If you look at Lebanon, effectively they've taken over the south area of Lebanon, which borders Israel. So Israel is completely changing and altering the political strategic landscape in the region. So this is going to have all sorts of impact. It's going to impact the rulers. I mean, if you look at the Egyptian leader, the Turkish leader, the Gulf leaders, all of them are now having to reevaluate their positions because basically, as far as Israel's concerned, their security is paramount, irrespective of everyone else in the region. And many of these countries were trying to normalize the relations with Israel.
So you mentioned Qatar. There were rumors about the Americans had actually warned Qatar about the attack or the imminent attack. And it almost made out that Qatar was involved and basically complicit in attacks on its own city. Is that true? What do you make of that?
So the details of the whole attack, they're still a bit sketchy. What we do know, the Israelis have admitted, they informed Trump 2 days before. Apparently Trump said no, but it was like a very quiet no. What we also know is that the Qataris were informed. The Qataris are saying that they were informed when the explosions had already taken place, which is quite interesting. Look, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, Israel's going to attack. The America's senior military officials, they are part of the chain of command in the Israeli military. There's nothing they can do that America doesn't know about. So what's happened here is they've probably informed the Qataris just to let them know that, look, this is going to happen. And basically, there's nothing much you can do. So that's why you find, since this happened, Marco Rubio went to Israel, and then he went to Qatar as well to placate them as well. So what's effectively happened here is Israel is doing what it wants to do, and America is basically making sure this doesn't change the status quo in the region. But what this has done is sent a chill down the spine of many of the Muslim rulers, because MBS from Saudi has come out. He's made a defense pact with Pakistan. And if Qatar, with the largest American base, can't be defended, there's an informal agreement in place between Qatar and America that America will defend it. If you can't be defended, this changes everything in the region. It basically means America's saying to all the rulers, look, if you fall out with Israel and Israel's going to attack, basically we're going to be on Israel's side, even if we've got a security agreement with you.
Okay. So before we get on to the impact that's had on the other rulers, obviously the attack was directed at Hamas leaders. What now for Hamas?
So Hamas really is fighting for its dear life at the moment. I mean, interestingly, despite the attack in Qatar, despite Israel saying it's going to continue doing this, Qatar hasn't expelled the Hamas office. The Hamas members are still there. obviously, look, they're being decimated in Gaza. Israel keeps using Hamas as an excuse to make Gaza unlivable. Hamas has actually agreed to a peace deal. They've actually agreed not to be part of the political process going forward. Israel's just not interested. Israel wants to continue the war. So in many ways, Hamas actually isn't the problem. Hamas has accepted it can't be part of the future of Gaza. And when they want to negotiate that, Israel's not interested. But then Israel will say Hamas is the problem, Hamas is the problem. Hamas actually isn't the problem. If Israel was to end the war tomorrow, Hamas is done. They've actually said that they're happy to not, if it's going to end the war, they won't be part of the political process or part of Gaza going forward. But Israel's not interested. That shows you Israel's goals are much broader than Hamas itself.
So, and now the rest of the leaders, the rest of the countries around the area. So you mentioned Saudi Arabia, they've signed a defense pact with Pakistan. Are they really that worried, or is this just they've already accepted that Israel is always part and parcel of the US? Are they turning away from the US, basically?
No, I don't think they are. There could be a couple of things going on here. Firstly, look, both Pakistan and Saudi are American allies. And, you know, Saudi's been looking for a NATO-style agreement where they provide security cover. So whether America does that directly or whether America gets another ally to provide that, it works out to be the same. Obviously, this because this happened at the same time as the Qatar attack is being seen as the region's changing. But, you know, Pakistan and Saudi have had an informal security pact in place for decades anyway. Pakistan has helped Saudi in the past, has helped the regime. Look, a lot of this really is to make sure the regime's position strong in Saudi Arabia. It's not really about the wider region. So Saudi wants that with America, but it's going to get complicated because Congress has to approve it. Israel won't really be happy about this. So the best way to do it is to get another ally to actually provide it. So if two of your allies are working together, that strengthens your position as a power.
How's it changed the region in terms of the population? Are you seeing more social unrest? Are you seeing more calls for military intervention? What do we see here?
So the Muslim world really appears to be shocked at what they're witnessing. You know, they're seeing genocide, they're seeing like massacres, and none of the rulers are doing anything. They want to see action, but the rulers are effectively saying there's nothing much they can do. The rulers are finding themselves really in a bind. The people want intervention, but rulers are worried really about their thrones and the impact this will have. So we're having more and more scholars coming out now, Muslim Islamic scholars saying there needs to be military intervention. In fact, even non-Muslims are saying this is so bad now, there needs to be a military intervention. There is a feeling amongst many that, you know, Israel's slaughter has gone beyond the global system and institutions that exist to stop these things from happening. So as a result, the only way this can be dealt with now is by a foreign intervention, because the global institutions are failing. They're not doing anything. The global powers aren't doing anything. So the only way really to tackle this now is a foreign military intervention. And, you know, that opens up a whole can of worms, you know, who would do it, practicality, things like that. But as we pass 2 years, really everything else has been tried. It hasn't worked. So military intervention becomes the most practical solution.
Do you see that happening? Do you see, first of all, revolution in these countries? And then do you actually see them mobilizing to send military intervention?
Yes, so I don't see military intervention happening naturally. I don't think a ruler will stand up and say, we're going to intervene. It would have to happen unconventionally, which is that the ruler's overthrown and then they intervene, or there's a coup and then the army intervenes or gathers a number of armies in the region. It won't happen for the normal process where a ruler says, okay, I'm going to stand up for Palestine now. But they would have already done that. So the only way this is going to happen is the ruler will have to be overthrown, the regime will have to be overthrown. Then it's possible.
There have been a number of proposals for Gaza post-war. Do you see any of these actually working?
So there's probably been about three proposals. You had the Egyptian plan, which talked about a five-year reconstruction, the Gazan stay. But the Israelis and the Americans criticized it because they said it doesn't deal with the security situation. This was like the first plan. Then you had the Netanyahu's day after plan, where he talked about demilitarization, where Israel remains in control. But there was a lot of pushback about this plan from people in Gaza and the Muslim rulers. And then probably the most recent, you've had Trump's Riviera plan, you know, where there'll be large-scale urban development, the Gazans will be relocated for the duration, there'll be multilateral trusteeship, and the oversight will be by external organizations, and Hamas will be disarmed. We've even seen Tony Blair and his organization get involved. But everyone sees this really just as an expulsion plan. This is really to get rid of the Gazans and they'll never be allowed back in again. So, you know, a lot of these plans, they're not very serious. There's not a lot of details there. So what you've really just got left is what Israel's doing, which is we're just going to clear out Gaza and make it unlivable. That's where we really are after 2 years, really, unfortunately.
So after 2 years, do you think Israel is in a stronger position? I mean, it has got more land, but objectively, looking at all aspects, is it actually stronger?
So I think, let's look at this from the Israeli perspective. They've been around for 72 years now, the state of Israel. And after 72 years, they are having to commit a genocide in order to seize Palestine. So they seized it in 48 and have expanded. After 70 years, they still have to carry out a genocide in order to seize the land. They've destroyed 72 years worth of favorable public opinion in just 2 years. Even Americans are questioning their relationship with Israel. That's the position they're in. In the West, we're seeing them make use of communist tactics to maintain Israel. They are clamping down, they are banning social media, imprisoning people, proscribing organizations. The US within we've got to remember that the US within 1 month had overthrown the Taliban. But after 20 years of fighting, the Taliban still prevailed in the end. So despite several decades of Israeli strength and Israeli expansion, we're still here today where they're unable to get rid of the population in Gaza. And, you know, we should remember that the Muslims lost Palestine for 88 years back in the 12th century. Despite that, ultimately, the Crusaders were defeated and the Palestinians prevailed. So the Israelis are looking at this. We're in a stronger position. They're even more worried today about their future. Global public opinion has changed against them in regions of the world where they have solid support. So despite all of that, they're still worried about the security. Still, it's not enough. They want more Syria. They want more Lebanon. They're talking about Egypt up to the Nile and even Jordan. So you could argue from a tactical perspective, they're in a stronger position. But the Israelis don't actually see it like that. They see it as they're still in an existential battle, which after 2 years of genocide still hasn't been resolved.
And what about the world? How does the world see it?
So really, a lot of the world has turned against Israel. They can see what Israel's doing. The Israeli propaganda machine has gone into meltdown. It's not working. So you'd think, look, something's got to give. People are watching this. And this is a scenario where something unconventional can happen. This is where, you know, someone intervenes or a people just cross the border. So yes, Israel, to be honest with you, is in probably the worst position in its 72-year history.
A lot to take in, Adnan. Thanks for your time today. If you want to learn more about the issues we've raised today, please check out our website. You can also learn more on many other issues by accessing our website. You'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.